Hi everyone, and welcome back to the Startup Operators Weekly Roundup. The Weekly Roundup is a show for people who love to stay updated with what's happening in the Indian startup ecosystem. If this is the first time you're joining us today, then please do consider subscribing to our channel for more startup-related content and share it with friends who you think will enjoy the content. Now, I know it feels like we're doing this roundup after a really long time. A long time. Yeah. And there's absolutely a lot of key development that we have to talk about this week. But before we get started, let's hear from Roshan on what he's been up to.
Well, it's been an eventful couple of weeks. I was at Saster in San Francisco, and it was very, very interesting to see the number of Indian founders there. You know, I mean, I know about 80 or 85 people that went to Saster from here. And I mean, the SaaS ecosystem is really, really thriving. It was amazing to connect with all of these folks. Very, very interesting products and companies. You know, I'm really bullish about the SaaS ecosystem going forward for sure, right? This past week has been very interesting. You know, I mean, India has a defense export target of around 35,000 crores by 2025. It's a very, very ambitious target. I mean, we're perhaps one of the top two importers of defense equipment in the world. And last week, we exported about, at least we signed contracts worth about 2,000 crores to Armenia. Right. Armenia is engaged in a bit of a conflict with Azerbaijan, and India is one of the first few countries to sort of help them out. This is a significant step, even though the number itself might seem really small, given the ambitious targets that we have. But, you know, considering that, you know, we've been a predominantly an importer of defense equipment, to even start thinking about exports is a very big deal. And on similar lines, we also started the 5G services, right? I mean, the formal inauguration of the 5G services. So we had the Indian Mobile Congress meet last week, and Prime Minister Narendra Modi inaugurated the function and everything, right? So yeah, that again, 5G, the potential of it is amazing, you know, with IoT, with AR, VR, etc. coming up, right? I mean, we're going to definitely need the infrastructure to be able to transmit data at higher quality and at faster speeds for sure, right? I mean, I kind of liken it to the highway infrastructure that we're going to have, right? I mean, so this is very, very significant for sure. Very interesting developments. And sadly, yeah, I mean, in the last couple of weeks, also Roger Federer has retired.
Oh, yes.
The GOAT, right? Perhaps among the top five sports people of the century, I suppose, right?
Yeah, I mean, he was the reason why I started following tennis.
I started following tennis because of Sampras, you know, who was ahead of him, of course. But yeah, I mean, Federer to me is the GOAT. I mean, the way he's able to handle himself both on the court, off the court, and the whole, you know, Federer-Nadal bromance as well, right? I mean,
you saw the farewell, like, I think after the final match, I mean, both of them are, like, weeping in front of the camera.
I mean, that's, I think, the true testament to how good you are, right? When your opponent, who's played against you for about a decade or so, you know, is weeping on the court while leaving. I mean, that's fantastic, yeah.
Well, but even closer to home, I don't know if you know that Bhaichung Bhutia is now the world's third highest goal scorer in the country. Like, first, I think, is Ronaldo, followed by Messi, and third is Bhaichung Bhutia.
Wow. Yeah, Bhaichung Bhutia has been playing for, I think, what, 20 plus years, man. I mean, 20, 25 years, maybe.
Yep.
He's probably in his 40s right now. You know, because I've been hearing Bhutia's name since when I was in school. I mean, pretty much before you were born. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, lots of amazing development. But Roshan, I think something we've been discussing on the roundup, and both of us are pretty excited about this. The ONDC has finally launched as part of beta testing in Bangalore. And I think over 200 stores have already registered on the platform. Now, there are three different types of players, I would say. One is on the buyer side. So, where applicants like Paytm, IDFC, Spice Money and all are acting as an interface for customers to buy things from ONDC infrastructure. And then also there are seller side apps, which has players like UShop, UEngage, Nstore and Bizom and more. And this is also a strong reason for banks to take part in the platform, because through ONDC, they're going to get access to the, you know, the Bharat towns and cities, right? So, a lot of action coming out over here. And the delivery on the other end will be managed by companies like Dunzo, Swiggy and Zomato. So a lot of activities going on here. How do you think this is going to pan out?
See, ONDC is a milestone moment in Indian commerce. We've discussed the potential of ONDC plenty of times on the podcast, right? I even had Mr. Koshi, who is the CEO of ONDC, on Bharat Vartha, which is the other podcast that I do. And really, you know, to see it in action is amazing. ET Prime had quite a few stories on this. They spoke to shopkeepers and whatnot. I'd highly encourage you to check that out. But yeah, this is amazing. What is going to be interesting is how, you know, the likes of, you know, Zomato, Swiggy, all of the e-commerce players right now, whether it's Flipkart, Amazon, etc., adapt to this new paradigm, right? Because the government is really serious about rolling this out. So I don't think any amount of lobbying in terms of, you know, stimming the efforts as such will work. So how are they going to adapt to this, right? It's really amazing. I mean, I'm really looking forward to the next 100 million other customers and shopkeepers and other logistics providers and whatnot getting on the network as such. What will also be interesting is to see the technology applications that will be built upon this platform, right? I mean, what other services will people render on top of this? There again, you know, I mean, people often surprise you when you open up a network like this in terms of their creativity.
Yeah, there might be use cases which even you yourself might not be aware of.
Exactly, right? We never would be aware of these things. Think of something like Dunzo itself, right? I mean, Dunzo was a ridiculous idea when it started about 10 or 12 years back, or perhaps lesser than that, I think, maybe 2014, 15, I think, yeah. But today, I mean, it's impossible to live without Dunzo, right? I mean, as I said, I was in SF and oftentimes I wish that I could just Dunzo things to people, right? I mean, whether it is room keys or whether it is, you know, simple food items or whatever it is. But today we take that for granted, you know, and it's a legit use case. So I'm really looking forward to the many other use cases that will kind of get discovered. Also the other, you know, services, right? The travel services, the small town logistics providers, all of those guys, right? I mean, it'll be interesting when they get on the network as well. I mean, they will start experiencing some demand from this network. It's going to be fantastic, I would say.
But also one more point I'd like to bring out here is, right, it's a brand new network which is being rolled out, right? And I think for the adoption of any new technology or infrastructure, the things that are very critical is the trust and the convenience of it. Now, while I understand we are still in the beta testing phase, do you think that we can actually get to the level where we aspire to be?
It'll take time. I mean, obviously, you know, trust is not something that's built instantaneously, right? We still have to see, you know, how the fulfillment will work at scale, right? Because last mile in commerce itself is kind of tricky, right? I mean, it's you've seen, like, you know, people want to refund, people want to return, people might have differences in terms of size and this and that and whatnot, right? I mean, how are you going to account for all of those things? These last mile, you know, I would say nitty-gritties will get covered as the network matures, basically, right? But considering that, you know, we've had 10 or 15 years of e-commerce so far, and we've had buy-in from the major e-commerce providers on this network, I think those things will get ironed out.
Okay, so during these last 2 weeks, one of the biggest headlines within the startup ecosystem was Adobe acquiring Figma for $20 billion. Now, this is the biggest buyout ever of a privately owned startup. And prior to Figma, Adobe's largest acquisition was Marketo in 2018, which was for $4.75 billion. Now, while we all know how great Figma is and like how Figma can integrate within the Adobe suite, yet Adobe stocks drove down by 17% when this news was announced. Now, my question to you is, why is that, right? If you can like help simplify the entire argument.
See, the public markets are not particularly rewarding in terms of, you know, investing for the long term, right? I mean, unless it is hard infrastructure as such, especially in these kind of matters, people definitely do not understand, you know, the value of something like this, right? But clearly, I think Adobe had tried to compete with something like a Figma, tried and failed, and was, you know, Figma was kind of chipping away at the market share, right? I mean, while Figma at 300 million or so ARR, projected ARR, is not a serious dent on Adobe's revenues yet, I think the direction in which they were heading and also the pace of growth, right? I mean, that would have been alarming for Adobe, right? I mean, because they've quickly become the standard. I mean, nobody shares any PhD files anymore, right? I mean, everyone pretty much operates on Figma. I saw an interesting article by Jake Saper, who is the partner at Emergence Capital, on how, you know, Figma built for design and not for designers specifically, right? In terms of building for collaboration as such. So they had the jobs to be done framework in mind and built for the end project as such, fully realizing that, you know, two or three people may work on it. There might be multiple versions of it and so on, right? And enabling that to be more seamless, you know, rather than enabling designers specifically in terms of what they are shipping. That's an interesting article. We'll link to it. I mean, you should definitely check that out. Aside from that, I mean, it also, you know, shows that it's not easy for an incumbent to build these things, right? You can't just wake up tomorrow and like start building stuff like this. On a similar note, Google retired its Stadia, right? Yeah. Start your product. And, you know, it's so funny, right? I mean, someone had started a Stadia shutdown countdown, right? About 4 or 5 years back, in fact, 4 years back or something. And, you know, it's come, that prophecy has come true before its time, 400 days before, right? I mean, it's fantastic how incumbents, we might think they have, you know, infinite amount of resources, right? Millions or billions of dollars of money, tens of thousands of people, and such a vast advantage in terms of networks and connections and whatnot. And we might think that, you know, they can perhaps build any product in the world, right? But it isn't as straightforward as that, right? It takes a lot to kind of move and maneuver, and it certainly is a lot of effort.
Stakes are high, right?
No, stakes are high, of course. It's the classic innovator's dilemma, but also, I mean, it's tough to move fast. Right, it's tough to change directions. So yeah, I mean, this is fantastic. $20 billion is a lot of cash.
Yeah, I mean, so I there's this quote I have. Figma's annual recurring revenue was $400 million, which was a tiny fraction of Adobe's $14 billion, making it unreasonable for Adobe to pay the equivalent of 11% of its market value for 2.8% more ARR.
Like I said, it's not the revenue, you know. I mean, the revenue may be insignificant at this point of time, but I think the direction in which they were headed, and also the pace of growth. Figma has grown 10x in the last, you know, what is it, 2 years or something like that, which is phenomenal. I mean, you know, it's the classic exponential curve, right? I mean, if they continue on this path, I mean, they'll soon catch up with the Adobe.
Also, one thing to Figma, I mean, I have to give is the entire timing of it. I think Figma was founded around 2013, 2014. And that was also when the whole HTML5 standard was released, making possible for products like Figma to actually come out.
Yeah.
Right.
So, no, and I think if you go back to the early days of Figma, right, I mean, there were quite a lot of iterations. This is not the first iteration of the product. There was an interesting thread or article, I'm not very sure, on the early days in terms of them just being very directionless in the beginning, trying to figure which way to go. And then, you know, hey, 7 or 8 years later, I mean, acquired for $20 billion amount, right? I mean, it's very interesting how these things work.
All right. So I think this piece of news will be really interesting for folks who order regularly from platforms like Swiggy and Zomato. Zomato is taking a tough stance on cloud kitchens after a recent viral Substack post exposed a dingy cloud kitchen in Bangalore that was operating more than 200 different brands.
Wow.
The food brands had little to no differentiation on its menus and raised several questions over food safety and hygiene standards. And as a result of that, Zomato has now released a statement saying that they'll be manually checking any physical location that runs more than 10 brands out of a single unit. Additionally, most of these brands have poor reviews and ratings on the food aggregators' platforms. And interestingly, there was this graph that I came across, which has on the x-axis the number of brands that operate in a kitchen and the y-axis the customer satisfaction scores. And I mean, I don't think it's a big brainer here, but as you increase the number of brands from a single cloud kitchen, your customer ratings and food ratings go down. But Roshan, operating 1,200 different brands on a single cloud kitchen.
I mean, this has happened to me before when, you know, I've ordered from this really what I thought was a nice place on Swiggy, right? And then I happened to look at the place on my daily commute back home and I thought, oh my God, I mean, this is, I couldn't believe that this is where I was ordering from, right? I mean, because the photographs and everything, you know, sort of dress up the reality. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, just in terms of building trust on the platform, the likes of Swiggy and Zomato have to do these checks to make sure that people know where they're ordering from and also ensure that the quality of food that they order is safe and hygienic. Yeah.
Yeah, I think as a result of this, they're also in talks with the National Restaurant Association of India and its partners to arrive at the right approach on how more, you know, cloud kitchens like this can be prevented from operating in this fashion. Okay, moving on to our next piece of news. India's logistics sector is undergoing massive transformation and Prime Minister Narendra Modi has unveiled the National Logistics Policy. And while announcing the new policy, he said that this is a very important step towards the making of a developed India and added that the policy has come with a new energy for every sector. Very bold statement to make, but what do you make of it?
See, logistics costs in India are perhaps the highest in the world, right? I mean, if you compare, you know, some of the Southeast Asian countries or Taiwan and all of those, right? I mean, the reason why they have a thriving manufacturing base is also because of the low logistics costs that these folks have, right? And again, this is something which is a low-hanging fruit for us. And it can be an enabler of multiple other things, right? I mean, to make sure that logistics costs are driven down. We've seen the kind of work that has happened on the highways. We've seen, the work that's happened on the waterways as such, right? In fact, I feel the infrastructure, ministry headed by Shri Nitin Gadkari is perhaps one of the most, one of the best performing ministries in the Prime Minister Modi cabinet. This is key, right? I mean, we often talk about, how India could potentially become a manufacturing superpower. And that's not going to happen with 15% logistics costs like what it is right now, right?
Yeah, this policy, I mean, the aim of this policy is to bring down the current logistics cost, which is around 13 to 14% of the GDP, down to single digits, like around 7 or 9%. And this will be at par with countries like Germany and Japan that are known for how they manage logistics.
There have been various initiatives on this front. I spoke to the bureaucrat who is managing the Indian bridge management system, right, for instance. Now, these are things that, we think are such low-hanging fruits, but they haven't been done forever, right? I mean, there is no one repository of all the bridges in India, right? Monitoring in terms of, hey, how old is this bridge? What is the maintenance like? What is the capacity, load, and things like that, And not just from an accident perspective, but even from a perspective of optimizing it, right? I mean, there's nothing much on that front. Right. So the Indian Bridge Management System, for instance, is a single repository, a platform for all of these bridges, right? And has all of this data connected with sensors and whatnot that can really help us do plenty of things on that, right? In terms of infrastructure and whatnot. So yeah, I mean, I think in terms of infrastructure, logistics, there are a lot of 101 things that still have to be done from our perspective. And I really like that, the focus is there at this point.
And also with this national logistics policy, one of the key areas is about digitizing the entire ministry, right? And currently, India's logistics sector has over 20 government agencies, 40 partner government agencies, 37 export promotion councils, 500 certifications, and more than 10,000 commodities. And it's, by this in itself is a market of $160 billion.
Wow, crazy.
So while that's happening on the government side, cryptocurrency, the state of crypto in India, I mean, has been in the red for a while. And adding on to that, the ED has recently revealed that WazirX's utility token WRX and an Ethereum token Tether, which is USDT, has been frozen with respect to an investigation being conducted against Aamir Khan and others relating to a mobile gaming application called eNugget. The recent failure of USD, which is Terra USD, and its sister currency Luna has jolted the Indian and global crypto markets. The effects of stablecoins' 80% drop in currency value has wiped out over $45 billion of people's money. And having said that, in India, we have over 350 blockchain startups, which are operational last year. And, with such a state of affairs within the crypto sphere, how do you think this is going to pan out?
There's no mincing words, right? At this point, I think it's a bit of a low point in terms of crypto, right? And it's also because I think the hype was just unreasonable, right? Crypto was going to solve everything, right? From social, injustice to inequality to economy to...
Okay, I think over there, like crypto would be separate from block.
Well, people didn't view it that way, right? I mean, the crypto maximalists were, proponents of crypto for everything. Right? Literally everything. That's that meme, right? I mean, what is that?
It's like a mob mentality.
Web3 will solve it or something of that sort. Now, I feel like the standards, the protocols, the technology and the innovation is very, very important. That's what I've been saying from forever, right? I think it's a invention of wheel kind of a milestone, right? Crypto and blockchain as such. But I think some of these currencies, some of these assets as such, we've seen how they've performed, right? I mean, when there was enough money in the market, all of these prices went up, right? And now when there's a bit of a tightening of the money, obviously all of them have fallen unreasonably, right? Even more than some of the other assets as such. Some of these folks used to rail on gold as such, right? Now, while gold hasn't really taken off much to my disappointment, right? But it has held steady, right? So I think this is useful introspection for all of the crypto folks to figure, what are some of the real and practical use cases that crypto can be applied to, right? Nobody is saying that it's not a, it's not a phenomenal innovation. It is, truly. But then I think we have to be measured in terms of what we promise and what it's capable of.
But how do you think this, the current scenario would play out from the lens of a VC, right? As I mentioned, there are over 350 startups working on blockchain and
crypto. I am only, you know, I don't know whether to laugh or feel sorry for, you know, some of these VCs who got coins instead of equity on some of these investments.
I remember the Polygon fundraise.
Exactly. Right. I mean, so I don't know what to say about that. Right. I mean, so I think they must be really kicking themselves right now.
All right. Let's move on to some more positive news, so to say. Audio streaming and podcast platform Cuckoo FM has raised $21.8 million in its Series B1 round. And this was led by Nandan Nilekani's venture fund, Fundamentum Partnership and Paramark Ventures. This also marks Fundamentum's maiden investment from its recently launched second round, which has a corpus of $227 million. Yulu has raised $82 million in a Series B funding round led by mobility technology company Magna International. DotPay, which is an offline payment service provider and commerce platform, has raised a funding round of $55 million, and this was led by Temasek. And a digital banking infrastructure provider Signzy has raised 210 crore rupees, or roughly $26 million, from Gaja Capital, Vertex Ventures and Arkham Ventures. Roshan, anything you'd like to add to this?
Yeah, Gaja Capital seems to be going hard on SaaS, right? They've earlier invested, I think, 100 million plus in Lead Squad, now Signzy. So it's also interesting to see Cuckoo raise a round as well, right? I mean, their monetization journey has been pretty interesting. They have a million plus paying subscribers now.
Yeah.
And who would have thought, you know, I mean, people always say, you know, India is the DAO market and not the ARPU market. Well, that is soon changing. With the monetization experiments of Cuckoo and some of the others as well. So yeah, interesting to see that for sure.
Yeah, I think what will be more interesting is that this week's talk of town, there was an article published in Money Control, which was an interview with Abhay Hanjura, who is the co-founder of Licious. And he talks about vegetarian capitalists in the startup world, referring to VCs. Would really like to get your thoughts on that.
I think it was a stupid comment, really.
I mean people... Licious was the first unicorn in the D2C space back in 2021. And
it... Sure, and there have been plenty others, right? There's been Fresh to Home, there's been, Meetigo, and so on and so forth. And if you look at the rate of vegetarianism in India, I mean, it's soon declining, right? I mean, it's fast declining, for better or worse, right? I mean, non-vegetarians are growing in India. So, and there is a significant market, huge significant market. So, I mean, in terms of investing, look, investing is a matter of values and interests, right? I mean, people definitely can, you know, bring their own biases to the table, not just in terms of whether, you know, consumer or whatever, right? I mean, people also, certain VCs don't invest in crypto, for example, right? Or certain VCs don't even invest in software marketplaces and stuff like that, right?
Right.
People don't. I mean, people just have their own biases. And I think it's perfectly fine, right? I mean, so what is the point with that? I think it was just a...
Just a quote-unquote from the interview. Quote-unquote, he says, meat continues to languish in the Kali Thali, which is a black plastic bag, with sanitary pads, condoms, and alcohol. It's the fourth stepchild. Cultural hypocrisy was the greatest impediment. Now, I don't know whether I can agree with that, because... right now, F&R stores in Bangalore don't even give you a carry bag.
Give me a freaking break. Give me a freaking break. I mean, dude, there are more non-vegetarian restaurants out there than vegetarian restaurants, right? I mean, come on. Like, this is just like some, you know, clickbaity PR shit, right? Which is fine, I suppose. Hey, I mean, more power to them. Let them find innovative ways to stay in the news and everything. But they don't really have to do that, you know? I mean, Licious is a nice company. I mean, I certainly am a... loyal customer. I've been ordering from, you know, for 3 or 4 years now. I'm very happy with their services. In fact, you know, stupid comments like this make me think of, okay, something else, right? Maybe, I mean, I should check Fresh to Home or Meetigo or whatever it is. Someone who has more reasonable, you know.
Folks, if you also have something to add to this conversation, do let us know through the comments below.
See, just to summarize, right? I mean, it's perfectly fine. I mean, if someone's not comfortable investing in that, so be it, right? Yeah. I mean, you're not
everyone
comfortable.
Everyone has their own personal preferences.
Yeah, I mean, some people don't invest in gaming, for example, right? I mean, because they feel that it's sort of like a, I won't call it gambling, but some of these skill game sort of startups, right? I mean, I know people who don't invest in that because they don't think it's ethical. So what, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's fine. It's entirely fine. I mean, but I think this vegetarian capitalist remark is just a bit over the top, I think. Yeah.
You know, I can imagine, like, you remember those conversations you used to have back in school and college, like, hey, you're a vegetarian, yeah, and you have to try non-veg.
Yeah, nonsense.
All right, Roshan, before we end this roundup, why don't you take us through some of the conversations you have lined up for this week?
So I'm talking to Shruti of Apna Club and Raj of Zaggle. It's been a while since we've spoken to founders on the podcast. I know it sounds weird when I say that, but it's almost been, I think, 3 weeks since we put out an episode. I'm really looking forward to these conversations. We're trying to change things up slightly, maybe, you know, focus a little more on content rather than, you know, guests as such. And it's a work in progress, right? So we'll keep you guys updated in terms of the new direction that we take. But keep your comments and suggestions coming in. Let us know, you know, what we should do more of, do less of, and any new ideas that we should explore. I think Gunjan and I will give it a shot. Yeah. Anything that's ethical, legal, moral, and within that framework, please.
All right. So, yeah, Roshan, thanks. Thanks for that. Yeah, folks, if you want to reach out to us, you can definitely leave a comment below the video or tweet to us at Operator Startup or drop a message to us at on LinkedIn. Our social handle over there is the Startup Operator. Along with that, our email ID is thestartupoperator@gmail.com. And if you would like to receive regular updates straight to your WhatsApp inbox, check out the WhatsApp link in the description. With that, we'll do some more digging on what's happening in the Indian startup community and get back to you next week with more news. Until then, take care and enjoy pujas.
Take care and happy Navratri.